The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So as I've said, this morning, there's a shift now in the 16 stages to impermanence, the insight or the wisdom part of the practice, seeing impermanence. And then it's through the seeing of impermanence, the impact of that, that can be a change. Whereas earlier in the practice, the changes that go about are primarily practice changes. So we're, you know, calming the breath, calming the body, calming the mind, gladdening the mind, bringing about joy and delight. These various things that are brought about through practice. And all those things are kind of practice contingent, depending on how us doing the practice to a great degree. And now there's this beginning to focus on impermanence. And then impermanence is a kind of recognition, a perception of sorts. And then that perception gives birth to understanding, which in the understanding then initiates a change. So it's not practice-initiated change, but it's insight-initiated change. That distinction makes sense to you? So it's basically understanding. And and I think all of you know that impermanence is a huge theme in Buddhism. The Pali word is anicca. And it's translated usually as impermanence, sometimes as in Tanjef likes inconstancy, Tanisara Bhikkhu likes inconstancy. I like transience sometimes because everything's in transit. Everything's coming through. And I think of there's three aspects of impermanence that sometimes people talk about. One aspect of impermanence is the loss part of it. That if things are impermanent, then they're not going to stay, and then there's loss. And some people focus a lot on that and feel a certain degree of grief or sadness bitterness about things are passing. They're losing their youth. They're losing their health. They're losing their relationship. They're losing all kinds of things. Impermanence means things, you know, changing all the time. They're losing things. And for whatever reason, some people focus a lot on that side of the equation. And of course, sometimes losing things, having things pass, is very welcome. And things are kind of not going well. So I'm glad that's over. And then the other side is of impermanence is that there's something new happening. It isn't like things pass and then nothing's there to replace it. But there's the fact that things are changing all the time means that there's something new coming into the field, coming into your awareness, something new arriving as well. And in fact, in order for something new to happen, there has to be change. Even, you know, at kindergarten, the teachers are teaching the kids about that in order for the leaves to... you know, that we have the changing cycles of the season. The leaves fall, that they die, they fall on the ground, they decompose, they provide the nutriment for the next year's leaves to grow. And so there's this kind of need, you need to have the dying of the leaves to have the new leaves come. So that when things pass away, it allows something new to happen. And sometimes, you know, you don't want to tell that to someone when their loved one has just died. You know, this is good. You know, that doesn't work that way, but there is this aspect of the impermanent nature of things that also allows the new things to happen, the new change. And more important, I think, from point of view of Buddhist practice, it allows for because things are always changing, it allows us to be involved in that change. It allows there to be practice. We're not stuck with our suffering. We're not stuck with the way things are. But rather, because of practice, we participate in the field of impermanence in a particular way that is very hopeful and meaningful, significant, moves us towards greater peace and freedom and happiness. If things weren't impermanent, you couldn't be able to do that. So because things are changeable and changing, there can be practice. And the third aspect of impermanence, it's somewhat related to the second, is that... because we live in a field of change, how things change is contingent upon the relationships that it's in. It's you know, the whole causal field of cause and effect comes into play. If things were fixed and solid in an absolute way, then they would not exist in relationship to anything else. But because things are impermanent and come into existence because of the gathering together of causes and conditions, it's there in relationship to a lot of other things. And so a deeper insight into impermanence allows us to understand more deeply the relational aspect of our life as well, and allows for relationship. It allows for both, you know, interpersonal relationships, but also relationship to the world and to ourselves and all kinds of things in a deeper way. So impermanence has these three aspects: the aspect of things go away, things pass; the aspect of things, new things arise; and then there's also the aspect of the relationship that exists in that field of rising and passing. And the insight or the seeing, perception of impermanence, understanding of it, doesn't take a lot of meditation. There's plenty of it in this world of ours that is available all the time. We see, you know, we see ourselves getting old. We see our friends getting old. We see the seasons change. We see, changes, all kinds of changes in nature. And we buy something, and before we know it, it's gotten old. We buy bread and eat it fast enough and it gets moldy. Or we buy a new toothbrush and pretty soon it's worn out. And so you see the change of things all the time. And in fact, there are some people who are, I think, are not Buddhist practitioners, who are a lot wiser than some Buddhist practitioners, because they've really taken in the obvious impermanence of life, what you can see kind of out there. They've experienced a lot of it. Maybe some of it's been quite difficult. And some Buddhist practitioners haven't really been right in the middle of the obvious change of life so much. They haven't been matured by that contact. I think that insight meditation allows us to, as I said earlier today, be impacted by the impermanence in a more deeper way. But more importantly, to start seeing impermanence at a more refined level than the obvious level as we're walking around. And so we don't just see it, you know, that changes of nature. We don't just see it that, you know, our car tires wear out over time. But we also start seeing that moment by moment, there are all these changes going on. So you might feel you might feel a certain way. I've been in situations where I've had physical pain when I meditated. And then oh, this is terrible. I'm just miserable. This is going to be here until they ring the bell for sure. It's permanent until they ring the bell for sure. And but then if I pay very careful attention, I notice that I'm not constantly in pain. That there's a constant shift going on. I'm 90% pain, whatever. But you know, then there's this really loud sound outside, and for a few moments I'm not in pain. I'm paying attention to the sound. Or then I think some thought arises about something that happened earlier in the day or yesterday or earlier in the week. And I get caught up in the world of last week for a few moments. And then, my pain. Or the pain intrudes again. And so it turns out that the more subtle, more refined your attention is to the moment-to-moment arising and passing of things, you'll find that you're actually not in pain all the time. Or if you're feeling depressed or sad or happy or whatever the emotion might be, it might seem from a distance like a global picture, I'm just unhappy. But if you actually kind of track what's going on moment by moment, there are certainly lots of moments of unhappiness, but there's moments of other things as well going on. There's a kaleidoscope that arises and passes of things. And sometimes we take in the generalization. We take in kind of like the broad general view of what's happening. And we don't really see the details that make up the big picture. It's like my teacher in Burma liked the analogy of there might be a row of ants walking down the path, black ants, and from a distance it just looks like a black line. You don't even see it ants; it just looks like a black line. And you get close enough to it, and you see actually that it's individual ants with a space between them. You know, it's not a solid line. It's a broken line of ants. And so you have to get close enough to see that. Or the other analogy that's often used in meditation circles is that of a film being projected on a screen. And I think we all know that what's being projected on the screen is not movement. What's being projected on the screen is a whole series of still shots, of photographs, basically. And however, it's happening so quickly, you know, many shots per second, that this wonderful capacity of the mind, the wonderful ability the mind has to make that into motion, into something that has continuity, is part of, you know, the mind's doing. And so it's possible, I've been told, I don't know if it's true, but I've been told that some directors who are so familiar and so sharp with their mind, so familiar with the world of film, certain films can actually see, not the movement, but see the still shots going up and down. I don't know if that's true, but it's been pointed out through research that meditators have a much higher ability to see that flicking change on and off than people who don't meditate. Because a heightened ability to notice, to differentiate and not generalize, not tie it all together. So part of meditation practice is developing the capacity to see more clearly so that we can start not seeing through the concepts that we paint reality with, but actually see the kind of details. If we do that, we'll start seeing things are changing quite a bit. One of the grossest, one of the biggest generalizations we make is that about the self, I am this way. And not a few people talk about how this happened to me yesterday, I think, or the other day before. Someone told me that, you know, her self-image basically, I think she was in her late 40s, her self-image of what she looks like is stuck in her 20s. You know, she's telling me that's kind of like, you know, she knows she's older, but somehow, you know, it's this almost subconscious way of having a self-image. It's that she's still stuck there in the 20s, in the image. So people, we develop a view, an idea of who we are, and sometimes we think who we are is actually shifting and changing much faster than our view of who we are. And so part of, again, the function of meditation is to drop down below the conceptual level, the generalization level, the interpretive level, and begin seeing what's actually going on in the details of our experience here. And if we do that, then generally, we start seeing that things are actually arising and passing much more quickly, changing much more quickly than the mind sometimes believes or thinks. So in our Vipassana scene, there's a practice that's called sometimes called choiceless awareness. And choiceless awareness is taught in a variety of some subtly different ways, but the basic idea is that you don't choose what you pay attention to, but rather you sit and open your awareness up, let your awareness be present. You have to be present for this. So you have to be present. But then in the present moment, you allow whatever is going to arise, its loudest, to come to your awareness, and you become aware of that, be mindful of that. So if a really loud a car goes up by outside, you know, you weren't expecting it, you weren't constructing it, you weren't, you know, waiting for it. But it's so loud that that comes into awareness without any choice. It's there. And because it's there, you pay attention to it. If suddenly there's a cough arises, you didn't plan it, you weren't thinking about it, it wasn't a choice, but then the sensations of coughing arise and you just become aware of that. A thought arises into prominence and you just become aware of that. A feeling arises, you become aware of that. And so there's no choice, but you just stay open to what arises next. What arises next. And you don't land and stay and hold on to anything. You don't get involved in rumination, thinking about, reacting to something. You stay kind of choiceless and open, relaxed, aware of what comes next, what comes next. There's going to be a constant shifting, foreground and background shift. Things are constantly shifting. What also shifts in this choiceless awareness is your ability to be aware itself. So you can be aware, oh, now I'm present, or now I was drifting away for a while. And so it's all this changing going on. So choiceless awareness kind of opens is a practice partly of paying attention to change, to how things are always changing and moving. And if you and the point is to kind of be open to notice the changing. You're being aware of that part of your experience which is changing, not that part of your awareness which is fixed. But as you get more concentrated, you feel, find out that everything is changing. So what I'd like to suggest is we try this for this next meditation and see what it's like for you to really kind of sit there in the middle of a field of choiceless change. And I see you doing your ear a lot. Are there hearing assistant devices in the box there? Maybe that'll help you. Some people use them. But we'll do this with the breathing. So the breathing is kind of the constant. It's kind of like having a, standing in a strong wind, but you're holding onto a pole. And so you're not going to be blown away exactly. So you're staying with the, you have this stability with the breathing. You're breathing. The breathing itself is impermanent, but then you're very relaxed and you're aware that in this field of experience that breathing's happening in the middle of that all kinds of other things is happening. And be choiceless about it. Don't choose anything. And just be aware of different things come into awareness. Different things impinge on awareness. Different things have interest for you. And don't follow anything. Just be aware, oh, that's arisen now. Almost like, oh, that's arisen now. What's going to arise next? If I relax and open again, what arises next? It's like if you have a room full of doors, all the way around doors, and you go around, you open one door, oh, that's interesting, that room. Then you walk over and you open the next door, and next door. It's kind of like you're not going into any doors, you're just kind of staying, oh, open, oh, what's that like, oh, oh. Make sense? Sense enough?